I'm an old man, lonely and unloved, sick and hurting and tired of living. I'm ready for the hereafter. It has to be better than this. I own the tall glass building in which I sit, and 97% of the company housed in it, below me, and the land around it, half a mile in three directions, and the 2,000 people who work here, and the other 20,000 who do not. And I own the pipeline under the land that brings gas to the building from my fields in Texas. And I own the utility lines that deliver electricity, and I lease the satellite unseen miles above, by which I once barked commands to my empire flung far around the world. My assets exceed $11 billion. I own silver in Nevada, and copper in Montana, and coffee in Kenya, and coal in Angola, and rubber in Malaysia, and natural gas in Texas, and crude oil in Indonesia, and steel in China. My company owns companies that produce electricity and make computers and build dams and print paperbacks and broadcast signals to my satellite. I have subsidiaries with divisions in more countries than anyone can find. I once owned all the appropriate toys, the yachts and jets and blondes, the homes in Europe, farms in Argentina, an island in the Pacific, thoroughbreds, even a hockey team. But I've grown too old for toys. The money is the root of my misery. I had three families, three ex-wives who bore seven children, six of whom are still alive and doing all they can to torment me. To the best of my knowledge, I fathered all seven and buried one. I should say his mother buried him. I was out of the country. I am estranged from all the wives and all the children. They're gathering here today because I'm dying and it's time to divide the money. I've planned this day for a long time. My building has 14 floors, all long and wide and squared, around a shaded courtyard in the rear where I once held lunches in the sunshine. I live and work on the top floor, 12,000 square feet of opulence that would seem obscene to many but doesn't bother me in the least. By sweat and brains and luck, I built every dime of my fortune. Spending it is my prerogative. Giving it away should be my choice too, but I'm being hounded. Why should I care who gets the money? I've done everything imaginable with it. As I sit here in my wheelchair, alone and waiting, I cannot think of a single thing I want to buy or see, or a single place I want to go, or another adventure I want to pursue. I've done it all, and I'm very tired. I don't care who gets the money, but I do care very much who does not get it. Every square foot of this building was designed by me, and so I know exactly where to place everyone for this little ceremony. They're all here, waiting and waiting, though they don't mind. They'd stand naked in a blizzard for what I'm about to do. The first family is Lillian and her brood, four of my offspring born to a woman who rarely let me touch her. We married young, I was 24 and she was 18. And so Lillian is old too. I haven't seen her in years and I won't see her today. I'm sure she's still playing the role of the grieving, abandoned, yet dutiful first wife who got traded in for a trophy. She has never remarried, and I'm sure she hasn't had sex in 50 years. I don't know how we reproduced. Her oldest is now 47, Troy Jr., a worthless idiot who is cursed with my name. As a boy, he adopted the name of TJ and still prefers it to Troy. Of the six children gathered here now, TJ is the dumbest, though it's close. He was tossed from college when he was 19 for selling drugs. TJ, like the rest, was given $5 million on his 21st birthday, and like the rest, it ran like water through his fingers. I can't bear to recount the miserable histories of Lillian's children. Suffice to say, they're all heavily in debt and virtually unemployable, with little hope of changing, so my signing of this will is the most critical event in their lives. Back to the ex-wives. From the frigidity of Lillian, I ran to the steamy passion of Janie, a beautiful young thing hired as a secretary in accounting, but promoted rapidly when I decided I needed her on business trips. I divorced Lillian and married Janie, who was 22 years younger than I was and determined to keep me satisfied. She had two children as fast as she could. She used them as anchors to keep me close. Rocky the younger was killed in a sports car with two of his buddies in a wreck that cost me $6 million to settle out of court. I married Tira when I was 64. She was 23 and pregnant by me with a little monster she named Ramble, for some reason that was never clear to me. Ramble is now 14, and already has one arrest for shoplifting and one arrest for possession of marijuana. His oily hair sticks to his neck and falls way down his back, and he adorns himself with rings in his ears, eyebrows, and nose. I'm told he goes to school when he feels like it. Ramble is ashamed that his father is almost 80, and his father is ashamed that his son has silver beads pierced through his tongue. And he, along with the rest of them, expects me to sign my name on this will and make his life better. As large as my fortune is, the money won't last long among those fools. A dying old man should not hate, but I cannot help it. They are a miserable bunch, all of them. Their mothers hate me, so their children in turn have been taught to hate me too. They are vultures circling with clawed feet, sharp teeth, and hungry eyes, giddy with the anticipation of unlimited cash. The soundness of my mind is of great issue now. They think I have a tumor because I say weird things. I babble on incoherently in meetings and on the phone, and my aides behind my back whisper and nod and think to themselves, "Yes, it's true."